Turuntuset tulee jo on äl.
And our main topic today is about inception marketing. To introduce the topic, I would say that marketeers are often confused by different complex theories about what to do and how to do. But we do know that it does not need to be complex. You, Eric, have been creating a concept of inception marketing that you provide that it's easy to get results by following some logical steps. And my first question is, can you explain what is the inception marketing?
Sure. The basic principle of inception marketing is to create marketing campaigns that give the buyers the realization that they would like to buy or to buy a product or service, and have them arrive at that realization with the feeling that it was their own idea. You know, very often these days, marketing and selling is designed as a pushing activity. It's like pushing, convincing, influencing, persuading. And inception marketing is really designed around a model that allows the consumer to come to the realization they want to buy something and then feel like it was that they arrived there and it was their own idea.
How do you do it? Or how do you think it should be done?
Well, so there's a couple of core steps involved in using inception marketing. And one of them, one of the key aspects of it is that it's really a much more strategic marketing methodology than most marketing. You know, these days, a company wants to design a new brochure or a website or an ad for a magazine or a radio advertisement or what have you. They're usually sitting thinking, well, you know, how do we sell our product or service better? What could we say about our things better? And they're really thinking largely about themselves and not so much about their market. And so one of the big differences with inception marketing is that the marketing is very strategic in the sense that it involves knowing the market very well. It involves knowing, for example, who specifically it is that you're trying to market to in a given moment. Here's a good example. If you can imagine, you know, all the guests on your show, we divide them up into two groups. And we ask the one group to create a marketing campaign that appeals to every single person in Estonia, every age, every political affiliation, every religion, every socioeconomic group. And then we just give the other half a different assignment. And their assignment is to come up with an advertising campaign for one person who's a mid-level manager at a manufacturing company, has three children, enjoys cross-country skiing and nature conservation. Well, obviously the second group has a much easier job because they can really get a sense of who it is they're marketing to. And as a result, what kind of marketing will appeal to them. You can see already that the thought process is not all about my product or my service. The process begins with whom is it that I'm wanting to connect with, whom is it that I'm trying to attract.
Can you tell what has been so? What is the most challenging for the companies when you tell? It's a kind of easy concept. You have to know your customer. You have to step in the customer's shoes. Why don't they do it? Or what is the difficult part of it?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things. First of all, there's a fundamental challenge with marketing these days, and that is that there's just so much of it. You know, that we're constantly being bombarded with advertisements and marketing campaigns and sales pitches and special offers and so forth. And there are just, it's just everywhere. In fact, these days, it's not just simply that you have to attract or win the attention of your prospects. It's that you have to steal their attention from something else, because there's just so much distraction available in the world these days. So that's the first problem. And then another challenge is, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but there's this sort of idea that you can catch a monkey by putting food in a glass jar. And when they put their hand into the jar and they put they close their fist around the food, now they can't pull their hand out. And now they become trapped because they're not willing to let go of the food. If they let go of the food, they could pull their hand out, but then they wouldn't have the food. So they feel trapped. Well, I think that's what's happening many times with customers with their marketing, is that most companies are designing their advertisements and their marketing to appeal to active buyers. They're marketing to people who are already interested in buying, and everybody is marketing to those people. And so it's not a very good market to market to, because frankly, it's very competitive. Everybody's trying to get their fair share. But at the same time, because when a sale happens, it's really easy because the person is already shopping. It's like the monkey with the fruit in the jar. We have our hands grasp around this easy target, and because we won't let go of it, we're not allowing ourselves to see the much bigger, wide open ocean of uncontested possibility.
What should we do to understand about the uncontested possibilities?
Well, like I said, one of the first things is that we stop thinking about our product or service. I mean, if you think about it, if your whole marketing is about your product or service, then all you're doing is designing marketing that might appeal to people who are already looking for your product or service. And so instead, we design marketing campaigns now that at their very core appeal to the wider market. They appeal to the wider market. In other words, one of the things we stop doing is talking about our product or service all the time, and we start talking about what's interesting to the wide open ocean of possibility. We start talking to even the people who right now are not interested or not thinking about our product. We find a way to appeal to them and engage a conversation with them that will then move them to the realization they want our product or service. And again, they arrive there thinking it's their own idea.
It seems to me that it's not just strategic, as you're told, but it's very, very expensive way of doing marketing.
You know, what's really fascinating is that it might sound that way because it requires a lot more thinking. The truth is that it's much less expensive on a per sale or a per prospect basis. I'll give you an example. We develop strategically with our clients something that we call an engagement pitch. So this is the initial headline or attention-grabbing email or landing page headline or the first few sentences of a radio advertisement. It's the first thing that's designed to catch their attention. Now, most people are doing that by talking about their own product or service. So I'd like you to imagine that you go to a networking event and there's 1,000 people at that networking event and you have the opportunity to meet all 1,000 of those people. Well, if you, the first thing that comes out of your mouth every time you meet these people is all about you, you're not going to connect with very many people. And that's the mistake people make not only in their marketing but also in their personal life and in their networking life, is that they just walk around talking about themselves all the time. When we use a different type of engagement, when we use engagement that is appealing to a broad audience, instead of 1,000, you know, now if you walk around, you know, just talking about your product or service, then the only people you're going to connect with are people interested in your product or service. So that's like less than 10% of all the people in the networking event. So maybe you have 100 prospects by the time you're done. Whereas somebody who has a more strategically designed engagement pitch that's designed to create conversation, not to sell something, might have 1,000 prospects to talk to at the end of that networking event. And so that's much less expensive on a per prospect basis because you could literally be talking to 5, 10, or 20 times as many people.
And so what are you talking about? Because sometimes we all know that you have to be very efficient, you have to be targeting very concrete things in your talk, everything that is taught to us. So what do you do differently?
Well, let me give you a tangible example that I used in my talk when I was in Estonia a couple of months ago. The example I use is, imagine that, and this comes from a friend of mine who actually is running a wedding photography company. Now, I would like you to imagine that he has a room full of people that might be clients. They might get married one day. They're thinking about getting married. They're all at different cycles of wedding planning, but they're all might one day want to hire a wedding photographer. Now, if he stands up in front of that room of people and he says, I'm going to talk about world-class wedding photography, then how many of the people will stay? Well, the answer is really fairly easy. Only the people that are right now actively interested in wedding photography. Nobody else stays for this talk. Now, on the other hand, if I do some evaluation and I decide that, well, hang on a second now, I already know that when people are getting married, that it's generally the bride, it's most often the bride that's out there looking for the photographer. And if I give some thought to the way a woman thinks of the a wedding, by the way, do you think that men and women think about a wedding day the same way?
No.
No, they don't.
Or do they? No,
not at all. They think of it very differently. And it's really interesting because some countries don't like to acknowledge that there's differences between men and women. But I always ask this question of the audience. I ask all the women, I say, how many of you, or how old were you the first time you thought about getting married, the first time you visualized yourself walking down the aisle? And you know, what answers do I usually get? 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 12 years old. Then I go, men, how old were you the first time you thought about getting married or visualize yourself walking down the aisle? Guess what?
Not yet.
Many of them never have.
Yeah.
You know, It's just a different psychology. And so now that I know that psychology, I think about this now. If I know that that a woman has potentially been thinking about her wedding day since she was 12, then that tells me some things about her. For example, it tells me that this day is very important to her. Do you figure that's true?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So now, instead of saying, I'm going to talk to you about world-class wedding photography, I say to my 1,000 women in the audience, I say, you know what? There are 7 mistakes that brides make that they regret within 1 week of their wedding, and I'm going to teach you how to avoid those mistakes right now. How many people stay?
Half, at least.
Yeah, maybe at least, if not all of them. But if I say I'm going to talk about world-class wedding photography, it's like 10%. Well, even if you're right, if it's only half and it's not all of them, if it's 1,000 people, it's the difference between talking to 500 people or 100 people. And that's what being strategic is about. That's what understanding the psychology of your market is about, is coming up with pitches that are engaging to their value system.
But Eric, how do you dig into people's psychology, into people's mind?
Well, there's a variety of ways to do that. I mean, it depends a great deal on your industry or, you know, an individual industry. But the short version is this: what is important to them? That's really what you want to know. What's most important to them about their life, about their business, about their job? What's most important to them? And when you can identify what's most important to them, then you have some sense of their values. And at that stage, it becomes much more straightforward to engage them.
But is it enough to ask? Or should you use your time trying to spend some time together with them in order to really understand in depth what is important?
It really depends on how strategic you want to be and how big the market potential is and how much budget your individual company has. For example, one of the problems with just asking is that quite often they don't know. This is going to sound a little bit sexist, but quite often when we ask women what they want, they don't really give us exactly the right answer. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but
every day,
every now and again, every now and again, I might, for example, ask my wife what's wrong, and she might say nothing. Well, if I believe her, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble.
Okay.
So sometimes asking the market isn't really good enough. For example, I will often ask women, when I've said to them, how old were you when you first thought about getting married? And they, 4, 5, 6, 10, 12 years old. Then I go, okay, so what is most important to you about that day? And they say, well, the dress, the flowers, the music, and they all have these different answers. When I can tell you in one word what they want from that day, and they don't know that word until I say it. And then when I say it, they know it. And the word is perfection. That's what they want that day, is perfection. Now, they don't really know that, because they think of all the details that go into creating perfection. And so simply asking your customers or asking your market what's important to them won't always be good enough. Sometimes it involves really developing what we call a strong sense of corporate empathy, where you really have to imagine what life is like in their shoes and really dig in.
Okay, so you actually, part of the things is that you go to the customers, you get the information, and on the other side, you try to bring it to the more strategic level, trying to generalize and find out what is the common word for the group.
Yeah, very much that, very much like that. And of course, the tighter you can make the group, the better. So one of the challenges or mistakes that we're often making is, we try to design advertising or marketing campaigns that appeal to everybody that we'd like to sell to. Well, yeah, that's just not going to work. Like, it isn't going to work anymore. So instead, what we have to do is subdivide our whole market into smaller sub-markets and then create campaigns that work specifically for those markets.
We also usually face the problem here in Estonia. All the marketeers, marketing managers telling that, hey guys, the market is just 1.3 million here, or Estonian population is just 1.3 million altogether, with the newborns and the people who are more than 100 years old. So if we try to, and they tell us that if we try to divide the market into some type of segments, then it's too small anyhow to do any marketing for them. So that's why we try to target all of the Estonian people. What is wrong with this assumption?
Well, we are stupid.
That's the exact same thing as the monkey getting trapped by the jar. It's that you're looking at this number and saying, well, there's only 1.3 million, and so I have to hold on to all 1.3 million, and your hand is going to get stuck in the jar. If you really want to do things properly, you break them down into sub-target groups. And I mean, here's the thing. You can create a campaign that might appeal to 1/10 of 1% of the population if you're really lucky, if you're really good at your marketing. Wait a minute. On the other hand, what if you found out there was 100,000 people that were exactly your target market and you figured out a way to reach half of them? That's a bigger number.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when I look at some research and try to convince the companies looking that, okay, you tell that you are targeting all the Estonians, and then finally we see here that you have 25,000 customers. So what's the meaning of targeting every one of them when you still can reach only about 20 to 30,000? That is a really kind of a small niche, but probably somehow there is something connecting them why they are your loyal customers.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Okay, it was just a comment, not a question.
Oh, I see. No. But I think I understand. I think you're right that when we really are talking about values alignment as best we can the more you understand the values of your individual target markets, the easier it is to create the right products for them, the right services for them, and of course the right marketing for them.
But now I turn around the questions and ask, okay, when we talk about Estonia, we have rather small companies here. What should the big companies do? Is there something different when you are multinational, having offices in 200 different markets? Do you have to be different in every market? Or do you think that the kind of the, if you take even the wedding photography example, is this the same in different cultures, in different countries, the perceptions about weddings and photography?
Well, you know, I think every industry has to do an evaluation to determine how true that is for them. For wedding photography, I would say, yeah, pretty much that's the case. I mean, every country that I've been to, it's usually been, you know, every country that I've been to, the brides place a very different type of importance on the wedding day. And not that the husbands don't find it important. They just have it. It's important for different reasons to them. And so as a result, what the bride really wants that day, it's her day. It's her day to be the princess. It's her day to be, you know. And so as a result, she needs, you know, that marketing, I think, will pretty much work in just about any culture, particularly as this sort of Western idea of marriage becomes more and more and more prolific. But when we think about multinationals and we think about larger companies, I mean, do they need a different approach in every market or for every market? I think so. I read once that Hostess Potato Chips, you know, the company that makes Hostess Potato Chips, that those potato chips actually taste different in different states in America because the tastes are different in those states. The same packet of chips, still called plain chips or salt and vinegar chips or what have you, is actually formulated to a slightly different palate in each of the countries, in each of the states they're in. So yes, I think that if you really want to be good at marketing and you want to get the highest level of return on investment from your marketing, then yes, your marketing has to be tuned to the local market.
If we go back from what you started actually talking about, it was that you're not taking or you're not picking the people who are already looking for the product available, but maybe you're turning to the people who are not aware of it, who are not interested in it, and etc. How long is this trip? How long it takes to convince them if you're just building up networks and trying to find another way to talk with them? When do you get your money?
Well, you know, I again, this is a question that's different depending on each campaign. I mean, some of them...
You have any examples?
Some of them turn into money much more quickly. Some of these campaigns can turn into money much more quickly. I'll give you a very good example of a client that I was working with in the realm of accounting. And so this accountant, you know, what they were doing is they, you know, have various advertisements in different locations. And then clients would come and spend an hour or two interviewing the accountant, reviewing their accounts, getting some feedback on their accounts. And then maybe a third or half of those people might become clients of the accountancy firm. Great. So then what we did is said, okay, now let's get strategic. Let's develop an inceptive campaign. And what we began to realize is that when they spend that 2 hours with the prospect, they're actually giving the prospect quite a lot of value already. So we said, well, wait a minute now. What if we created a new campaign? And the new campaign said, look, I'm an accountant and I love accountancy. And I especially love doing accountancy for small business owners. And so what I've done is I've created a special introductory offer where I will spend 2 hours with you reviewing every aspect of your accounts, your current expenditures, your current bills, the way your taxes are structured. And over the course of that 2 hours, I will create for you a report that shows you how you're going to save like thousands of dollars on your accountancy fees over the next year and how you'll probably save a lot of money on taxes by doing some things smart today that you might not have done until the end of the year. And here's what I'll do. I'll do the whole session for $1,500, but I won't even charge you for the session unless you think it was absolutely worth your time. Now, here's what happens. Of course, people like the idea of this because there's no risk for them. They're like, you're going to spend 2 hours with me. You're going to help me go through all of my accounts. I don't even pay unless I'm completely happy. So people buy the service. But here's the other thing that happens. Because they've now transacted with the accountant, because they've now bought a service from them, it's actually much more easy for them to become a customer because they already think of this accountant as their accountant because they just spent money with them. So first thing that's happening is the accountant is making money sooner because they're selling a service that used to be a sales process for them. And secondly, they're increasing their closing average because they're turning those people into customers earlier in the process.
It's interesting because in a way, what I was thinking, as I'm dealing with PR almost 20 years now, and the problem with my clients and mostly with the PR market is that actually that it takes about half a year. If you start from a zero, you have no reputation, you're starting to build your reputation, it takes about half a year of hard work. And then finally, people will start notice you. And only then you can use this, that people know you, you can use it in your sales. And your sales are going slightly up. Somehow, what you are talking today, it's a different conception than a PR, what the example I brought.
Well, you know, inception marketing works extremely well in PR. And in fact, I'm going to be back in Estonia quite soon. And I think it's in September. And I'll be actually teaching in my talk. I'll be talking about one of the very powerful ways to create free and very powerful PR. And one of the ways to do that is to recognize that one of the things we do in inception marketing is we take a look at who our target market is. And it's not always people that are buying from us. It's sometimes people that can help us sell. So, for example, in PR, your target market is a reporter, editor, showrunner, producer, you know, whoever it is that's putting together the story, radio, television, media, or whatever the case may be. And so what we have to do if we're going to get noticed by them is we don't want to be noticed. We want to grab their attention. You see, that's the trouble quite often with marketing is that we design marketing so that we can be noticed. I don't want to be noticed. I want to grab your attention. So let me grab your attention. And here's a perfect example of a way a friend of mine did this with selling a book. He wrote a book about influence. And he was getting ready to launch the book with some traditional advertising and marketing. He was going to buy lots of time on the radio and television in America. The problem was around the time that he was getting ready to publish, the American primary, the American elections were taking place. And once that starts, you cannot buy space on the radio. It's just extremely difficult. And so the challenge, of course, is that now he's got this book and his main marketing idea is gone because he wanted to be on the radio and he can't afford to compete with all the presidential, you know, candidates. So then he starts thinking, wait a minute, let's get inceptive here. Let's think about what's going on. Well, what's the first step? The first step is to decide what's most important to the target audience. Well, the target audience in this case is not the people buying the books. The target audience is the reporter, the producer, the editor, the showrunner. So what's important to them right now? Well, you know what's important to them? The election. That's the only thing that's important to them. And you'll notice that when news cycles are happening, they just repeat the same old news again and again and again. So they're constantly looking for a fresh angle on what's already interesting. And so what he did is he issued a single press release, and the press release said, author on influence book predicts outcome of U.S. presidential election. And all of a sudden, every reporter and every press agent and every editor wanted him in for an interview and he was on every national and international television and radio show. He was turning them down. He couldn't fill his calendar. He was full. And he got millions of dollars of free PR for his book for free when he was actually going to be buying all that space on the radio.
How but did instead, the book go?
The book
How did the elections
well.
Go?
Yeah, the book went really well, and he did. And here's the funny thing: he never even predicted the election. He just told people how you would predict an election, and that got him on every radio and every TV show for free. And so it didn't have to take a long time at all. When you get strategic, when you get into the psychology of the people that you're trying to grab their attention of, it just becomes a lot easier.
Do you have a good example of product of or service or something that you yourself have bought through the same process that we are talking today? So somebody has been strategically wise in their marketing and you have bought it finally.
Yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, I'll have to give some thought to a specific example. But in the meantime, let me give you a different version, just to give you an example of how we've used it in one of our businesses and from the other side. And that is that for years we've been taking some of our core clients on an adventure trip where we take them up Kilimanjaro. So we take them to Africa and we take them up Kilimanjaro and we do some leadership skills training and so on. And we used to run webinars that talked about, find out more about our trip to Kilimanjaro. But what we began to realize is, what if we changed the process? What if instead of that, we realized there were a lot of people who are already curious about Kilimanjaro or just adventurous people generally, and we ran new webinars, and the new webinar said, curious about Kilimanjaro, it was curious about Kilimanjaro, here are 5 ways to make your trip more safe. And what ended up happening is that we got literally 3 times as many people signing up for those webinars. And so, of course, now we give them really good advice on the webinar. And then as a result of that really good advice on the webinar, they end up wanting to know more about our program and joining our program. So what we aren't trying to do is sell them our program. What we're trying to do is teach them about the process. And as a result of that, creating so much credibility and authority with them that they end up wanting to come and do business with us. I'm trying to think of an example where somebody's used a really good campaign to attract me. And, I'm having a hard time with it because, frankly, most people are not using extremely strategic and effective marketing.
Please try for us at least. No examples, yes.
You know, let's carry on, and if one pops into my head, which
yes,
may well,
then I'll
excellent,
tell it.
Excellent. Eric, I want to ask, what is more challenging in your mind? Is it to teach people to understand the inception marketing, or is it to make them implement it?
Yeah, you know, it's to get them to implement it, and that's why quite often our clients will end up wanting to engage somebody from our team to come and help them with it. And one of the reasons is that the old habits of features and benefits selling, talking all about your product or service, those habits are really hard to change. It's the monkey trap. You know, you're holding on to what seems to be a strategy. You see, the thing is, look, I hate to, this is a silly example, but I'm just gonna use this, this is really silly, but if a man walks down a busy street in some, you know, big, huge city, and he walks up to every woman he sees and asks her for sex, just says, will you have sex with me? You know what? I think eventually, after 1,000 women, he might meet one that says yes. Now the problem is if the very first woman he asks says yes, and he didn't, and he was just lucky, then he will start to believe that that's a good strategy, and he'll keep using it. Well, I think that's what happens with us with companies that are using features and benefits or old traditional marketing is that it does occasionally work, and because it occasionally works, they think it's the best strategy. And so when we teach them inception marketing, they go, wow, that's really going to be good. And then one of the things that'll happen is they'll often use part of inception marketing, like using a really good engagement pitch. And now they have all these extra prospects, and then they'll go back to their old model of selling. And they're still doing better than they were in the old days because they have more prospects, but they're not using the full magic of it because they haven't really figured out that if they use a really powerful inceptive story instead of a sales pitch, then they can close 50% instead of 5%.
How do you work with the teams then? What do you do to make them change?
Well, there's a couple of issues. One is really educating them as to why this works, showing them case studies of why it's worked, breaking the process down and involving them in developing it so that they really get some sense of ownership. And then, frankly, training them, you know, doing really, you know, new sales training, new marketing training, like really just educating and educating and educating. And often it has to be done more than once. I've worked with even in one of my own companies, I taught all my salespeople this stuff I taught it to them and they were doing it and they were doing it. And then I went away for a few weeks. I came back and I walked into the sales room and guess what? They're back to the old sales pitch. You know, I had to retrain again. And you know, so sometimes it just takes some time to retrain, to train and retrain people to stick with it. But here's the thing. Once they start hitting the major, major successes with it, they won't go back to the old ways.
That's true. I want to take an example of a typical Estonian company. And we usually, from a show to show, talk about this area. It's about log houses or wooden houses. Estonia is very good in producing and exporting log houses. Sometimes we are the 4th country in Europe, even despite our small size. Sometimes we are even on the 1st place, depending on the circumstances. And that's why we discuss a lot about the log houses in our shows as well. And the question is that imagine that there is a company producing log houses in Estonia and, for instance, exporting the houses to Canada. And yeah. And the question is, how should they use inception marketing?
Well, okay. So let's go through this, you know, let's go through this in a little bit, some of the steps. Okay, so the first step is it's not about the log houses. The first step is that it is about the target market. So, first of all, the overall target market is Canada. All right, but that's too big. Not everybody in Canada is interested in log cabins, and not everybody will ever be interested. So that's too big. So now what we have to do is break that market up. So we could break it up into different socioeconomic groups. We can break it up. I don't know if you have an appreciation for how big Canada is as a country, but you could fit Estonia in there probably 100 times. It's a big, big country. So we could break it up into different provinces. We could break it up into different towns within the provinces. But then the other thing is we could break it up into two other ways. We could break it up into the builders and the buyers. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So the reason we might want to subsection these people is that by breaking them into these subsections, we're going to get a much better sense of how we can market to them. So, for example, if I found a group of people, let's say I decided to zero my marketing in on a little town called Kelowna in British Columbia. Matter of fact, let's say we went to the Big White Ski Resort and we said to those people that we want to sell Estonian log cabins. What's really cool is they have a community there and the building code locally will only let them build log cabins. Isn't that interesting? So it's to keep a particular look on that, you know, in that area. So now if I wanted to appeal to the buyers in that area, one of the things that I might do is produce some really good educational content on log cabins. Not trying to sell my log cabins, but teaching them about the value of log cabins. What's great about them? What are some of the dangers they should know about? How does it affect property prices? You know, just some really good educational content, some really good educational videos. And so now as somebody becomes curious about log cabins, they go, oh, I found this channel. These guys are just experts about log cabins. I learned everything I know about log cabins from these guys in Estonia. And then one day they go, oh, it turns out they make them and export them here to Canada. And so, you know, by getting involved in their decision process, we earn credibility and authority, and we become much more likely to be the one that they want to buy from in the end. So, you know, that's a soft version. It's not super strategic, but it's a soft version that instead of walking in immediately trying to sell log cabins, instead what we're doing is saying, let's educate the market about the log cabins first. Now, on the other hand, if we were dealing with, say, like builders or importers or agents that we might want to work with in those countries, or in that country, what we now might want to take a look at is what's most important to them at any given point in time, and we might not know that until we do some really good market research. But let's imagine, for example, we did some market research and we found out that, you know, well, how about this? Let's say it was a few years ago, and we found out by doing some market research that the local municipality was going to pass a bylaw that would mean that only log cabins could be sold in this one area. Well, wouldn't it be interesting if we, the Estonian log cabin manufacturer, could be the first one to tell all the agents in that area that this law is coming? Well, you can do that by conducting the right research. Now, if you're the one that told them that law is coming, then you're the one that first educated them about the opportunity. And as a result, you're inside. You're now having a conversation with them. You have rapport, you have credibility, and you have a great opportunity to turn that into a sales conversation.
Very good. I do hope that all the log home producers can listen to the story and learn from that. And here is my last question, that you are one of the persons who have the, I don't know, is it luck or success coming up with your own theory? And I just want to ask, what's behind, or how did you bring the things together and put together something that you can call that this is the inception marketing and I'm the man behind that?
Sure. You know, the short version of that is that we're all standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, I can't pretend that everything that I'm doing is original. What's original is the way I've put it together. And really what's happened is that over my life, I've been a businessman, I've been a salesperson, I've been in business pretty much my entire adult life. And as a result, I've taken it seriously. I mean, I've read countless books and I've been to many marketing symposiums and seminars. I've studied the very best people. And as a result of that, I've come up with some theories of what works and what doesn't work. And about 2 years ago, I was offered the opportunity to teach marketing at Anthony Robbins business mastery programs all over the world. And so what I now had to do is find a way to take something that I was good at doing, and I had to find a way to teach it really well. And those are different things. Being able to do something and being able to teach something is a very different thing. And so when I decided that I now needed to be able to teach it, I had to really examine my process and look at how do I do this for clients, because I always thought it was a very custom process I was doing for each client. But as it turns out, it was really, there was a process I was going through. There were steps. And so what I did is I broke those steps down into very specific steps, and I found a way that I could teach it really effectively. So, you know, I've been influenced very heavily by people like Jay Abraham and Tony Robbins and Chet Holmes and many others. And you know, and as a result of the influence of all those people, I've come up with a model that is highly teachable and is highly effective in pretty much any, you know, in any marketing situation you could imagine.
Eric, I really welcome you back to Estonia. I think that our companies have a lot to learn from you.